week of October 11th, 2020. This is Showbiz Sandbox, episode 514, the podcast that brings you all the dirt on the news making headlines around the entertainment world. In Los Angeles, I'm Jay Sperling Reich.
And in Birmingham, Alabama, I'm Michael Giltz. Hey there, Sperling.
How are you, Michael?
I'm delightful.
How many streaming services do you subscribe to these days?
Well, I get Canopy through my library.
Okay.
So that's great. I have Disney Plus, Amazon Prime, Netflix, and Hulu. Hulu through my phone.
Okay.
I just get that as a bundle with my phone. Amazon Prime, Netflix, and Hulu, and Canopy. I think that's it.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm only asking because it's the only way you're ever going to see a movie again.
You know, Greenland, the Gerard Butler film. Low budget action flick that would hopefully appeal to young, you know, middle aged. Some people get them out to the theaters, a nice big noisy action flick. It's done okay overseas. They're not even going to bother with US theatrical. They're going to go straight to premium video on demand. December 18th, it'll be available for $20. To which I say, I don't get it. Why not put it in theaters for four weeks? What do you lose? If people don't go to the theater in 4 weeks, are they less likely to want to pay $20 to see it in premium video on demand? I wouldn't think so.
And at this point, frankly, why not just put it in theaters with premium video on demand?
Well, the theaters may object to that, but...
I think the theaters at this point would take... what's the word I'm looking for? I think... hold on, let me just look it up here. Oh, the word is anything. They would take anything. They would take your home movies if you had them.
Yeah, but that mid-sized movie, that's the perfect sort of movie to release right now in theaters. You know, it's low risk, relatively speaking. You're not going to lose anything by putting it in theaters and making it available. It's played all over the world. Why not let it play in the markets in the US that are open and give the theaters that are desperate for content a new movie to watch? Because that won't stop you from releasing it a month later on or 2 months later. This is October on demand. I don't get it, but we'll talk about this week. What else are we going to talk about?
Well, this week on Showbiz Sandbox, we are knee-deep in comic books.
Oh, I'll trade you a Richie Rich for a Casper the Friendly Ghost.
I have no idea what you're even talking about. What's a Richie Rich?
It's a comic book.
I'm kidding. You know, sure, big blockbuster movies are being delayed right now, as we were just talking. But someday, maybe even in early 2021, we'll start to drown in flicks like, you know, The Eternals and Morbius. And Black Widow, and Shang-Chi, and, well, frankly, we've got a lot of catching up to do, okay?
I have no idea what Shang-Chi and Morbius are about. Or the Eternals. None. Nothing. No idea.
You will as soon as they're released in theaters.
Okay.
Or on streaming. Cinemas already seem to be overwhelmed by Marvel and DC, but believe us, the deluge is coming. Meanwhile, playing at a drive-in now qualifies you for an Academy Award, and Governor Cuomo explained why a drive-in is about the only place you'll be seeing a movie in New York, at least for right now. On Inside Baseball, we'll focus on Disney. Its California theme park remains in lockdown. Investors are pushing the company to forget theatrical and place all its bets on streaming. And they're doing just that. The company is doing just that with Soul, the company's best reviewed film of the year. It's a Pixar film. You can watch it on Christmas Day, but again, only on Disney Plus. Of course, during Big Deal or Big Whoop, we'll discuss some of the week's top headlines. But first, as always, we turn over to entertainment journalist extraordinaire Michael Giltz to fill us in on last week's box office.
That's right. And we're looking at box office around the world, especially China. It's been National Day, which is a 10-9-day holiday, I guess, or 9 days,
yes,
I think.
It's called Golden Week. Golden Week.
That's right, where people are off work, travel to visit their families at home, a lot of them, and see movies. And the number one film around the world is a patriotic documentary called My People, My Homeland, or as I've seen it translated into English, Hometown. So I don't know what the best translation is, but I do know it grossed $163 million last week, and it's at $320 million total worldwide. At number two is Jiyoung Zia, Legend of Deification, which is sort of a sequel to Noja. It's set in the same animated universe. It includes the same mythological characters. In fact, Noja pops in there in an amusing coda kick, I believe, if not more, throughout the movie. But that movie grossed $65 million last week. It's at $217 million and counting. The word on it, some people are like, yes, they like it. It's a different type of movie from Noja. It's not a kiddie film. It's more serious and adult and sober. Some are unhappy because they wish it was more family friendly. Others say you got to have diverse bunch of movies if you want to create a universe. You know, there's some that are jokey, some that are deadly serious, some that are family friendly, some that are not. We'll have to see if that mythical universe that they're trying to build, if they can keep that going down the road. This one certainly made money. We don't know the budget of the film, but it's certainly making money, though it is falling a little bit harder than the documentary film My People, My Homeland. At number three is another flick bringing in bucks during National Day and Golden Week. It's Leap, the volleyball flick starring Gong Li. $29 million it made last week is at $100 million worldwide for a film that is surely not a big budget film. Criticism I've seen about that film, it focuses too much on the coach, Gong Li. It should be more about the team and teamwork. They made it seem too individualistic. That's a very Chinese reaction.
I was just going to say the same thing. I was like, well,
that's,
okay.
That's fascinating. Different cultures around the world. Like, no, you place too much emphasis on one person. It should be about everybody. They all have to work together. And that is how teamwork works. That's how you win games. It's never one person. At number four is a film I thought wasn't doing great. It's called Coffee or Tea, a Chinese comedy about three pals who go into business together. Last week, it just made a few million dollars, and I thought, ooh, that's really been rejected. But I guess it just came out on like that Sunday or something, because since then, this week, it made another $17 million. So it's now at $22 million and counting. Clearly not in the league of even Leap, much less Jiang Ziya or My People, My Homeland. But $22 million for what is surely a low-budget comedy, it's starting to catch fire. Maybe people are liking it more than I thought. And number five is Tenet. People are not liking that much here in North America, but worldwide, it made another $16 million. It's now made $323 million worldwide, a far cry from the $600 million it would need just to say this is a box office hit and it's never going to get there. But clearly overseas, 300 plus million and counting, it's doing quite well. At number six is The 800, another $10 million for that film. That's at $460 million worldwide. And then Vanguard, the Jackie Chan action flick, that made another $9 million. That's at $34 million and counting. Again, not doing great. Clearly the fourth or fifth pick for people during Golden Week, but Jackie Chan can still bring in some people, you know, no matter what. Then we have After We Collided, which apparently is getting a North American release. I think it's coming out next week, but it's overseas right now, and it's made $42 million total and counting. Unhinged, the Russell Crowe flick, that's at $36 million. Greenland, that made another $3 million. That's at $28 million and counting, though it will never open up in what was, once upon a time, the number one film market in the world. But talk about rejected. Mulan made $1 million this week. Surely not what Disney was hoping for once National Week came out. It wasn't poised for that release date, but certainly they would have hoped it's in theaters and it could still bring in some money. Thoroughly rejected in China, $68 million worldwide, far, far below. If you want to say Tenet was rejected and not really well embraced, compare that to Mulan. That's not even close. But of course, in many territories, if Disney Plus is available, Mulan was not released theatrically. I don't know why, but we'll get to that later. And then there's the New Mutants and Hocus Pocus that also pulled in another $1 million. So we did have a number one hit in North America. The new number one film in North America is The War with Grandpa, a light comedy starring Robert De Niro. I should have put that on a higher chart. It should be right in there with After We Collided and Unhinged. It made $3.6 million. It is the lowest grossing number one flick in North America since 1988. That's 32 years ago. Since a movie topped the charts with that little money. That's not good. But like you said, drive-ins now count for Oscar runs. So The War with Grandpa, hey, maybe De Niro's in for another nomination. I doubt it. But drive-ins are still open, but cinemas in San Francisco are not going to open. Why?
What?
Because the city is saying they cannot sell concessions. And they said, we can't open. We won't make any money if we can't sell concessions. We have all this evidence that shows so far it looks like it's safe. Restaurants are open. They're selling food. Bars are open. They're selling drinks, but we can't eat popcorn.
Yeah. You know, it's really interesting what's happening with movie theaters. You know, live theater, as you know, nobody's even trying. Okay?
Because they can't make money without full houses. They're not in the same situation as cinemas, which can get by on half empty or two thirds empty cinemas. They can do that. But, you know, Broadway houses, it doesn't work. You lose money on every showing.
Right. And so, you know, it's, I don't know what's going on. Well, I do know what's going on. Basically, you can't go indoors. You're going to get the COVID if you go indoors. Well, okay, then like bring me my groceries outside, which I know some people are doing. But, you know, everybody goes to the supermarket. That's indoors.
That's usually at 10 or 15 minutes. And you're always wearing a mask and you're out again, as opposed to 2.5 hours, which is a typical movie with trailers and stuff.
True. You know, it's just very interesting. And what is happening now is that the state of New York is one of two states in the United States that where movie theaters are completely closed. So New Mexico and New York. The issue is that New York, San Francisco, and Los Angeles, all places where movie theaters are closed.
And where the industry is so important, that's perhaps what confounds me a little bit, that the industry is so important to New York City and Los Angeles, and they are holding more firm or ignoring the facts, as the cinemas would put it, than every other state in the country. That's what confuses me a little bit. Governor Cuomo did give some insight on what they were arguing about. This doesn't hold for upstate New York, so I don't know why other areas in New York aren't open. But he says one of our issues is New York City. When people enter and leave movie theaters, you've got giant crowds shoved in together in those lobbies.
Which is true.
Even if you stagger showtimes, when you've got a big movie opening up, it's going to be crowded.
And so in normal times, I think that the 25% to 50% capacity, plus all the people that don't want to go to a movie because it's so far been proven fine. Part of the problem is that, you know, again, New York, LA, San Francisco, 18% of the annual box office gross comes from those three cities. So with those three cities being closed, no studio wants to release a big blockbuster film. That said, it is now affecting people in Europe. It is affecting people in Australia. It is affecting people everywhere.
Beyond that, just about those cities, it's their own cities and an industry that is vital to New York and vital to Los Angeles. You can't open Broadway, but people are opening cinemas. I would be very supportive if I understood the scientific reasoning behind it, but to have cinemas closed and restaurants and bars open.
And churches open.
That doesn't fly with me. That just doesn't fly. If cinemas should be shut down, then restaurants and bars should be shut down. If those can be opened safely, and I don't know about the evidence, you know, I have friends in restaurant business say, hey, look, there was some thing saying about people who were positive had been to a restaurant. They're like, yeah, but that doesn't mean they got it there necessarily. You know, have there been a lot of super spreader events? Maybe at places that don't follow the rules, I'd be willing to see that. But I haven't seen a lot of super spreader events in restaurants and bars that are following the guidelines. So I don't know what's going on here.
The biggest study was done in South Korea, and it was a post study where they basically, and by the way, in South Korea, they don't ask you whether you want to be a part of the study.
You're a part of
the study. Yeah. So they basically, on your phone, they download software and you have no choice but to download it. And you could be walking around and all of a sudden get a little text message that says, hey, 5 days ago, you were within a certain period of time around somebody who had COVID, who tested positive. That's the way they're doing contact tracing.
Right.
They never shut down their cinemas. They had 31 million people go to cinemas. Not a single case has been traced back to a cinema. Now, to nightclubs, yes, they have traced back cases to nightclubs and bars, because I think it's a little bit more, people are standing closer together, they're talking, it's a little bit more of a...
They're not facing forward with their masks on most of the time watching a movie.
Exactly.
You're not usually talking a lot during a film.
Remarkably, churches also a big, they've traced a lot of cases back to churches.
Well, we had the one big one early on, but I haven't seen many since they've started doing... my church has social distancing, every other row is blocked off, people keep their masks on.
Just in South Korea.
Right.
Just in South Korea.
Well, that was the church that broke all the rules. Have there been a lot since then?
I think maybe just one or two.
Right.
You know, by the way, the nightclub thing also just like maybe like three or four. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like there's thousands of nightclubs that are causing, super spreader events.
I don't know how many are open or what their policies are. But yes, again, it's puzzling. If your restaurants and bars are open, why cinemas can't be. And if they shouldn't be, I'm all for keeping them shut down, but everything should be shut down. So it seems inconsistent, that's for sure.
Well, certainly New York not opening, and Governor Cuomo he's basically picking winners and losers. He's basically, at some point there's a bit of a restraint of trade issue here. Not that I know the legal definition, it does not meet the legal definition, I understand, but
they failed in court when they tried, in certain states, they failed when they tried to sue and say, why can this be open and we're not? They haven't succeeded at the courts yet.
they were asked, they were told by they being NATO, the National Association of Theater Owners, look, don't sue Cuomo, play nice with him and he'll work with you. Well, that didn't work. So right. Now it's kind of like an all-out assault on Cuomo because, and by the way, did you see all the marquees that went up around New York State? And actually around the country where mainly because Regal Cinemas is closed, they can put stuff on their marquees that say, hey, Andrew Cuomo, let us open up.
Right. And some people are closing down. IMAX is furloughing 150 plus people in its U.S. market. That's a lot of people in terms of how many IMAX employs directly. So that's a significant layoff. Of course, every company is doing that. A restaurant shuts down or they furlough or fire 10 or 12 people. It adds up very quickly, that's for sure.
You know, last week, IMAX had broke all these records in China, right, during the National Golden Week. However, of course, as you know, IMAX is a joint venture in China because China won't let a distributor or an exhibitor come into the country without partnering with a Chinese company. So, of course, that what they do in China doesn't necessarily flow back to Canada, where IMAX is based, or the United States.
Well, all of this chaos, there's some good news and some bad news. Dune has moved. Of course, a million movies have moved. Dune is the latest. It moved from December to October of 2021, basically a year forward. And that led a lot of other movies to move. But one movie has moved back into 2020. It's Sony's flick Monster Hunter, starring Mila Jovovich. It has moved back into 2020, December 31st, to be exact. It's a $60 million action flick. It's exactly the type of film, I think it's based on a video game, that would appeal to young people that want to go out and see a movie. This could be fun. She's been a really popular star in other franchises. So that's exciting, good news to see. We've certainly been arguing for a while that mid-sized movies are your best bet. Release Greenland, release Monster Hunter. If they can make some money for some cinemas and keep the lights on, that's a big plus.
Yeah, and now anything, you know, they are willing to show a, you know, 32, 20. How old is Hocus Pocus? I don't even know.
1993.
Yeah, so they're willing to show that. So, you know, do the math.
Right. Well, you know, a classic film is a classic film, or at least a cult film. But we know that in 2021, they're hoping and thinking they'll be able to release new movies, that they're hoping maybe March, May, there'll be a vaccine and it will start to get widely distributed. And it won't be a panacea, but it will help us live with the pandemic and help us live with COVID-19 a lot more safely. And that means they're hoping to finally get movies like Morbius and Black Widow and Venom and Shang-Chi and the Suicide Squad and so on. And all the people are talking about, hey, what a superhero pileup we're going to have. We've got that list of those superhero movies, but then we follow with our own list. Like, what about Dune and Fast and Furious 9 and Jurassic World and Mission Impossible, Matrix? It ain't just about
franchise movies,
right?
Franchise
these big movies. $200 million movies, they are big rolls of the dice. We've got them all listed up, the blockbuster pileup coming from March of 2021 through July of 2022. There's a lot of movies circling, waiting for their chance to make big bucks again. My God, it really, you just go, oh, yeah, yeah, every week you got to go to the theater. Godzilla versus Kong, In the Heights, Luca from Pixar, Venom, Top Gun. It just goes on and on and on.
Well, you know, I call that, 2019, basically. I don't know what's the difference.
It looks a lot denser than 2019, but we shall see. Because, you know, you've got a year's worth of movies that didn't get released, or 9 months.
You also have nobody actually making movies right now. So you don't have the...
Well, we are. People are big back making movies. They're pausing. They're making a new Jurassic film. All these movies are going forward or pausing and then going forward again. So movies and TV shows are being made.
Yeah, well, kind of like the NFL. It's like, okay, this week you can play. Next week, right. Oh, you tested positive and you can't. So Jurassic World is, yes, you're being made. Oh, now we have to pause production because like
Batman is in production. It's paused. Now it's back up again. So, you know, I think that's a big deal. We are back making movies and TV shows, and there will be content available down the road. And hopefully they'll be able to do it safely, because no one should have to risk their life just to make a movie.
Wait, You said what? It's a what now?
I said it was a large opportunity. No, wait. I said it was a massive window. It was a big deal.
Oh, well, then it must be time for Big Deal or Big Whoop, our weekly segment where we discuss the top headlines in entertainment and tell you whether they're really important or just overhyped nonsense. You know, our first story in the category of things that have changed dramatically, you can add TV upfronts. Okay, now the upfronts are the annual tradition where major TV networks show off their upcoming debuts, returning shows, miniseries, and more. It usually takes place in the May timeframe, May-June timeframe.
Without masks. Then,
without masks.
typically.
Yeah. Then major advertisers kind of like get a look at all this stuff. They plunk down billions of dollars, betting big that some new shows will score. And, you know, they want to book their ads early and save some money. Okay. Well, that's all over. Okay. This year's upfronts were down dramatically, with Variety reporting advance ad commitments down 15 to 20%. That's a lot for the upfronts. Networks have fewer new shows and episodes to air, of course. Is the money going to streamers? Probably not. Or is this a permanent change? Also, probably not. But is this a big deal or a big whoop?
I think it's a big deal, and I do think it's a permanent change, and it's not because of the pandemic as such. That has accelerated what was already happening. Television is year-round now. The upfronts just don't make sense anymore as much. You know, it's not that fall season where you release all your new shows and then they dribble out and you have a few in spring and then you're done. It doesn't work that way anymore. It's year round. You have new shows in the summer, in January, August, you know, and so the buying of ads is year round now. And I think that upfront market just doesn't work anymore with the way television is being made. And some of it is going to streamers because there are streamers with advertising. It's not all, you know, Netflix. There is Peacock. And yeah. Hulu has ads, right? And others have ads. So there's an ad, there's going to be an ad level on HBO Max. So there are ads available and there will be money spent there. And I think it's so year round now that you're just not going to be able to corral everyone and say, hey, give me all your money now and hope you get lucky on the show you picked.
Actually, I take back my comment that is it going to streamers? The reality is, yes, the digital platforms, as you just pointed out, what's good about the digital platforms, according to a couple of the webinars that I have attended recently, is that they can do programmatic, advertising, meaning they can actually, you know, book their ads rather than just for a show. They can say, ooh, Michael is a demographic and a customer I want to activate for the following campaign, people like Michael. So no matter what he's watching, I don't care what he's watching, show him that ad, unless it's something completely, you know, that they don't want to advertise against. So that's pretty much what a lot of these marketers are doing. They're buying the algorithm rather than the show.
Mm-hmm. Instead of saying that Grey's Anatomy looks promising.
Right. They're saying, no, I want, 18 to 24 year olds or 20.
This many eyeballs and give it to me. I don't care where. Yeah. In general.
Yeah. Well, you know, look, moving on to another ho-hum week, you know, it's just really another week, another song. Debuting at number one, that is, on the Billboard Hot 100.
Woo!
You know, it used to be a big deal just to reach number one. Do you remember that?
I do.
Yeah, for the first 37 years of the Hot 100, no one jumped into the chart at number one. Not Elvis, not the Beatles, not Madonna, not Prince, nobody. Then Michael Jackson did it with You Are Not Alone, debuting at number one in 1995. They kind of came in batches after that, but 2020 is proving it's kind of ridiculous, actually. Some 9 songs have done it so far this year. This year alone, by the way, okay, 9 songs, and we're not even done with the year yet. When in all of history, okay, 9 this year, keep in mind, 44 have done the trick. Heck, Travis Scott debuted at number one this week with Franchise, and it's his 3rd song to pull that off. 1 artist, 3 songs. What is going on, and is this a big deal or a big whoop?
Well, we've got a link in our show notes to an explanation by Andrew Unterberger at Billboard. It's a great article. It's just the sort of geeky thing I love. He's like, yes, this happened. He puts it in historical context and he explains what's going on. Every time they change the methodology of the Hot 100, or most times, it creates a new opportunity for new songs to debut this way, and it changes what happens. And this is why it's going on. He says, all right, look, 95, Michael Jackson, his label held back the single for You Are Not Alone until radio play was huge. Right? People couldn't buy the song anywhere. So demand was strong. People wanted to buy the song. They could buy the album, which labels were always trying to do. This was the era where they'd release a single and then pull it back so people had to buy the CD for $18. It was very annoying, but it worked. And in this case, they did make singles available briefly, but they waited till the song was huge on the air, on radio, and then they released the single. So everybody, oh, finally, I can buy You Are Not Alone. And then boom, it debuted at number one. So that was like, ooh, people said, look at that. So then after that, people started doing that. They'd hold back the single and do it. Then in 2003, one song debuted at number one each year, 2003, 2004, 2005, 2006. The reason? American Idol.
American Idol, yeah.
Well done. 2009, then there was a pause. Then 2009 to 2012, six superstar singles debuted at number one. Why? iTunes. iTunes was there. Yeah. Suddenly people didn't have to go to the store to buy a song. Suddenly people were buying songs after years of like singles not being available physically, or, you know, they just bought CDs. Now it's digital. Yeah, you hear a song and 2 seconds later you can play it on your phone without even thinking. Instant gratification.
Then, so what is it now? Is it streaming?
It's that instant gratification, and now streaming has kicked in. People can go play a song immediately on demand, and that does it. And now that kept it going for the next few years. And now today we're back to physical singles. You know how artists have bumped their album sales by bundling T-shirts and concert tickets? Like, buy a concert ticket, you get a copy of the album and a T-shirt, and you get a bundled price, right? Boom, that helped album sales. Now they're bringing back physical singles. They have fan giveaways, special physical singles that, you know, are limited editions. And people are like, I want the new Justin Bieber physical single. And so people are getting into that tchotchke stuff again, getting back into physical product because they're hardcore fans and they want the new BTS with, you know, the guy's blood dripped on the single. Oh my God, I want the DNA, you know? So whatever they can do to psych up people to buy a single, they're doing that again, limited editions, things like that. And
can
now
they
that's
even play?
Working again.
Can they even play that stuff?
Well, they look at it and they go, now what? They try to shove it in their ear, but it doesn't work.
Yes. Yeah, it's like my kid asked me, looking at a record player, they said, yeah, I know what that is. It's a record player. You know, I still haven't figured out. How do you like skip ahead to the next song or like skip back to hear the song over again? I was like, you lift the needle up and you put it down. You know, it's like, oh my God.
So I love that article in Billboard. We got a link to it in our show notes. It was by Andrew Unterberger. I hope I'm saying your name right. But that was a very cool article, really informed me a lot and put all this crazy number one debuts into context. Well done.
Oh, Broadway. Broadway has trouble. I mean, they have trouble. That's trouble with a capital T that rhymes with C. That stands for COVID, actually, is what it stands for. Okay.
Well done.
We know Broadway can't reopen. We just talked about it. Most shows are, you know, dark until there's a vaccine. No mask mandate. And, you know, when people can sit in a sold out Broadway house, that's when Broadway will be back. And that's not happening anytime soon. So Broadway has officially announced it won't be reopening until at least May of 2021. That extends the longest shutdown of Broadway in history to 14 months and counting, because I don't think it's going to end in May. And Michael, remind me, by the way, after this to call my ticket broker, okay? Because I bought tickets to a revival of The Music Man with Hugh Jackman and Sutton Foster. Remember that? Remember when I did that?
I do.
Yeah, that was 2019, actually. And they've just announced, by the way, a new opening date for that show. It begins previews in December of 2021 and opens officially in the wonderful month to be in New York, February of 2022. Big deal or big whoop.
Well, you tell me, are you excited? Are you going to exchange your ticket and try?
They do it automatically. They do it. The only one that hasn't been done automatically that I had was, the Six just refunded us. They basically just said, you know, here.
Didn't you have a choice to get a refund? You surely they offered you the option for Music Man to get a refund.
Yes, they did.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
But American Utopia, which is the David Byrne
show. Oh, I want to see that.
Show, they basically said, no, don't worry. We'll be in touch. Don't worry. And meanwhile, the date is becoming closer and closer. And they only sent one email that says, we'll be in touch. Well, obviously, you're not going to be open. So how about getting in touch?
What happened?
I still don't know. They still haven't gotten in touch.
Oh, well, they'd like to reschedule the shows and they'll hopefully do it in next fall or the spring of 2022. We shall see. I hope they come back to Broadway. I was really, you know, desperately eager to see it. I don't want to watch it online. It's online, but I don't want to watch it. I want to see it in person. But
what do you think about Broadway being closed for? I think it's unbelievable.
It's a given. It'll be fall before they reopen, I'm sure. And I don't think it'll be the summer. That would be great. That would be wonderful. But yeah, it's never happened before in history. You know, it's never been shut down like this. 14 months and counting. It's devastating to all the businesses around it, all the people who devote their lives to it and just scrape by and have to do other jobs. So, and of course, you know, Broadway faces three problems. One, the pandemic. You can't have full houses. Two, The people who can't afford, they got to take other jobs. They're the brain drain of all the talented people who have to get work and feed themselves. Three, tourists aren't coming back anytime soon.
How come we didn't start with tourism?
Yeah, tourism. Yeah. That's, you know, well, new shows are watched by locals, but once they're long running, that means tourists, and tourists aren't even, you know, close to coming back. And that could be years before tourists come back in real numbers again. So it's just getting hit on all sides.
They're going to have to rehearse all of these shows all over again.
That's right. To be, you know, they'll have to remember everything again. Yeah, like, wait, the phantom of the, what am I? The phantom of the musical? The phantom of the show tune? No, tell me. So yeah, it's going to be rough. It's not going to get better anytime soon. And at least they're facing the reality. Before, they were like, well, maybe a few weeks later. They didn't want to cancel things. They were dribbling out cancellation notices and delays. Now they're like, no. All right, it's October. We know it's not going to happen before May. They picked May because that's the beginning of the next season. You know, shows would end typically in end of April or early May and be eligible for that year's Tonys. This time they're saying, okay, we know the season typically begins in May or June. Well, we know we're not going to start until the next season could possibly begin. We'll see what happens once we get closer to that.
You know, I kind of wonder, like, was this pandemic all a way to slow down the popularity of Hamilton? Was this the only way that they could, you know, kind of break the Hamilton stranglehold on Broadway?
People will be so excited to go. They will be cheering just to be in a Broadway house. They'll be thrilled to be back. Just as I believe people will be ready to go back to movie theaters. You look at what's happening in China and parts of the world where movie theaters are open. People want to go to the movies. There's nothing that has happened. Streaming has not suddenly made movie going a thing that kids don't care about. You know, movie going is fun. It's not the same to see it at home. It's so much better to see a show on Broadway live. It's so much better to see a movie on opening weekend with a jammed house of people yelling and cheering than it is to watch it on demand on your home. It's just not the same.
But well, if you get tickets to Hamilton when it reopens, you know, definitely take them because you don't want to throw away that shot.
That's right.
Yeah. Now, you know, I kind of segued us to Hamilton only because, of course, Hamilton was supposed to open in movie theaters and it was supposed to open in 2021. And then it did not open in movie theaters. Instead, it went straight to Disney Plus, to which theater owners said, that's not great, but okay, we understand, I guess. But then, of course, Disney decided, heck, you know what? Let's do that with, everything. We're going to do that with everything. Granted, Black Widow, they haven't done it with. They haven't done it with a couple of other titles as well. They did it with Mulan. And that's the topic of Inside Baseball this week. Inside Baseball is our segment where we analyze some of the headlines that have the entertainment industry buzzing. We'll explain what they mean for the business and, more importantly, how they affect you. And here's how they affect you. You will pretty much, this story and the stories we're about to talk about, you're going to be able to see everything on Disney Plus. Anything Disney does, you'll be able to see on Disney Plus
That's not true. But for the foreseeable future, Disney is getting pummeled on all sides. There's just bad news everywhere. There's bad news at Disneyland, their theme park. They're being pressured from activist investors to say, hey, forget cinema. Just go to streaming. That's where the future is. And Disney, the biggest cheerleader for movie going, the company that dominated the charts in 2019, 40% of all North American gross, presumably 40% of the worldwide gross, probably or close to it, was dominated by Disney films. They are abandoning cinemas again with their latest film, Pixar's Soul. But the important news first, they are making a feature film based on Space Mountain.
Yeah, I don't know how they're going to do that, but...
I mean, Pirates, you understood, right? Pirates is... Yeah. It's Pirates. Pirates.
There's an actual character. Yeah.
Well, there was no character. There were just pirates. There was no character. None.
A human being playing a pirate. Yeah.
Right. Oh, yeah, Space Mountain. There are space people, astronauts, I guess. But we shall see what they do with that one. It could be a good script. You never know. Pirates of the Caribbean was a massively popular franchise. But Disneyland, let's get right there. Disneyland is still shuttered. Just as Cuomo and Gavin Newsom are holding firm on movie theaters, Gavin Newsom is holding firm on theme parks. They say the park is not going to reopen anytime soon. That includes Universal. It's not just Disney. Disney's saying, look, other indoor venues are open. We're mostly outdoors. We're ready to follow all measures. There have been no super spreading events from Disney World in Florida, or as far as I know, and I don't know, but I haven't heard of any super spreader events from theme parks around the world. If you've heard of one, let us know.
Yes, you can write to us, dirt@showbizsandbox.com. That's dirt@showbizsandbox.com. You can call and leave us a voicemail. The number to call is 888-567-SAND. That's 888-567-7263. Or you can follow us on Twitter. We're at Showbiz Sandbox is our handle. Or, you know, like us on Facebook. Facebook.com/Showbiz Sandbox is where you can like our page. And definitely let us know if there's a super spreader event at a theme park so that we can let the news and the health authorities know. Because you should let us know first. Absolutely.
Right. So Disney fired 27,000 people.
I don't 28,000.
It wasn't furloughed, right? They were fired because they don't.
Oh, yeah. No, they were like, you know, laid off. They basically said, nope, we're no longer paying for your health care. We're no longer like, so they furloughed them first. And now they said, you know, those furloughs? Yeah, now they're layoffs.
Right. So I struggle to understand what's going on here. I want them to follow the science. I want them to be cautious. I want them to be smart. God knows if they get it wrong, we'll yell and scream that they made a mistake. We don't care if we were pushing them to do it. They're supposed to do better than us. They're supposed to be above that pressure to say, we got to open up again. They have to do what's best for the health and safety of the state, which is the best thing you can do for the economy. But I don't know what to say about this. I can't think of any good reason why they're not allowing the theme parks to open with limited capacity.
Limited capacity and certain health protocols in place.
Of course,
and by the way,
of course.
If you thought, I mean, movie theaters, you should see the exhibitors I'm talking to, all of their protocols, everything they're doing. I mean, it's just, they are going above and beyond. And yes, they're not doing it with, you know, they're doing it very often with people that are young in their 20s and, you know, 18, 19, 16, 17 years old. But boy, are they staying on top of the sanitation in those theaters that are open. Because of course, they don't want to be the ones to cause a transmission. Likewise, if you ever, I went on a Disney cruise once, I didn't touch a surface that wasn't wiped down within 5.5 seconds. I mean, literally, there seemed to be somebody following me around with a rag everywhere I went.
When was this?
This was 2012, 2013. And it was right around the time Edward Snowden, the whole Edward Snowden thing broke.
So it's long before the pandemic, of course.
Oh, yeah, no. But because cruises were kind of known for being, you know, places where E. coli could spread, they were just like constantly mopping and brushing and, you know, sponging. They just was, there was always somebody mopping something down or cleaning something.
Right. We know Disney does not want to have a super spreader event at Disney World or Disneyland, and they're going to do everything they can. And if the science allows them to open and the governor would agree, they'd be ready to do it as safely as possible. Is it the smart thing to do? I'm guessing at this point, maybe it is. I don't know. We're rising in 30 plus states. You know, people are like, why aren't they allowing them to open? The devil advocate's position is, well, guess what? We're not out of this pandemic and it's getting worse again. And we're about to have flu season. So is this really the time to reopen it? Maybe we should be arguing that they should shut down restaurants and bars.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
instead of yelling and screaming at Gavin Newsom and saying, why isn't Disneyland open? Should you be telling him, why are bars and restaurants open?
Well, that is very true. Look, you can go the China route, right? Which was very draconian. Mm-hmm. They closed down their entire country.
And New Zealand, and every country's different. And it kind of worked. Yeah.
You know, but that said, that's not something we chose to do here. So, and they've taken this half measure. And it really hasn't worked.
Right.
That said, you mentioned Soul. Keep in mind, Soul is a Pixar animated film directed by Pete Docter.
You're jumping ahead.
Oh, okay.
Because we got Daniel Loeb. I was going to ask, what do you think about shareholder activist Daniel Loeb? This is a guy who has, you know, been a burr in the side of big companies like Yahoo, Sony, Sotheby's, Nestle. He buys into companies and then he pushes them to do what he thinks is best for the future. There are shareholder activists who just want to squeeze out all the profits. He claims he's there to make the company better and stronger. And he's talking up a blue storm about Disney, isn't he?
Yeah. I mean, he wants, of course, all of the, basically all content to go to basically go Disney Plus. That's effectively what he's saying.
Well, also he says, look, don't pay a dividend. And that if they paid out a dividend this year compared to last year, it would be about $3 billion to investors. And he says, don't use that $3 billion to massively increase original content for Disney Plus, Hulu, and ESPN. He says, you've got to double your budget for Disney Plus to catch up with Netflix. If now is the time, if you don't do it now, you're never going to be able to do it. And that I can get behind. But then he says, don't waste movies on movie theaters. Put all your big budget movies on Disney Plus. Quote, just this week, says Daniel Loeb, Regal Cinemas shuttered all its U.S. operations and physical theaters. While we all share a certain sadness and nostalgia for this eventuality, I am sure that people felt similar emotions about horse-drawn carriages when the automobile was first introduced. This is in a letter he wrote to Disney CEO Robert Chapek, or Bob as I call him. Quote, every Hollywood exec has been able to enjoy first-run films in the comfort of their home theaters for years. We urge you to democratize this experience and to continue to embrace the future of home entertainment with the utmost urgency in executing the company's digital transformation. End quote. So basically he's saying movie theaters are dead. Put all your movies on streaming. You guys sit at home and watch movies. Why shouldn't everybody else be able to do that? Sperling, you've got the ear. You are right in the side of the exhibitors. How does this make you feel?
Well, I'm going to go back. I'm always at a loss for when Shakespeare was around. whenever that was, it was like 400 years ago. And when television finally came around, everybody said, oh, you know, or radio even. They said, nobody's going to go to the theater again. So this hack William Shakespeare, nobody's going to perform his stuff ever again. All theaters will close because we'll all just be sitting at home listening to the radio. Then television came around. They said the same thing. So the fact that he thinks that,
cinema is movie going is dead. Yes. Radio was going to kill movies. Cinema was, TV was going to kill it. VCRs were going to kill it. Cable was going to kill it. On demand was going to kill it. Video games are going to kill it. Virtual reality is going to kill it. And now streaming is going to kill it. That's what people say every time. And cinemas have maintained their popularity for 40, 50 years now in terms of the modern cinema. It was never as big as it was in the 30s and 20s, never. But
there's
a lot, but it's maintained its popularity. It's maintained a steady box office growth, steady ticket sale growth linked to population. Basically, it's as popular as it's ever been, even though people can access movies in their home on demand like never before in history. So the only result of streaming and cable and on demand is not that movie going is dead.
More movie going,
but that
is
movie are more popular and profitable than ever before. So if you don't make money in the cinemas, don't worry. You got a lot of other chances to do it. And if you do make money in the cinemas, guess what? There's a whole new gold mine waiting for you after it's out of theaters.
Well, Regal Cinemas, using Regal Cinemas as an example that they closed. That's a special case. Why is it a special case? Because they have an activist leader. They have, Mookie Greidinger is trying to make a point to both Andrew Cuomo in the case of the US and in the UK. He's trying to make a point to the government there by saying, give us some support here and with, some kind of relief. So I wouldn't necessarily use that. You had AMC, Cinemark, View in the EU say, no, we're going to keep our theaters open, in fact. Soul, the move by Soul is this is where I was headed a moment ago. That is a Pixar release directed by Pete Docter. Okay, Pete Docter's three previous movies, averaged $700 million each. Okay, that means that they made between $700 and $1 billion in box office. You tell me that Disney Plus, they can earn the same amount on Disney Plus. And what they've proven also, they are moving Soul to Disney Plus, but without the PVOD offer, meaning they're not charging extra for it. They're basically saying,
which tells us that didn't work.
Correct. It did not work. Okay. So the Mulan exercise where they said, okay, we'll charge $30 so we don't piss off the theater owners and maybe we'll make a little money back on this. It didn't really work, number one. And number two, what they're trying to do is prevent churn. And what I mean by that is Disney Plus, at this point, they have a lot of people who got Disney Plus with whether it was Verizon or some promotion that might be dropping off. They've seen Hamilton, they've seen all the good stuff, but what's really to keep them there? They need new stuff, new premium content to keep people interested in Disney Plus. Maybe not the parents with kids, but the people who are on the fringe. Now that said, I spoke to a number of people who all kind of felt this was inevitable, that Soul would eventually move to Disney Plus. None of the theater owners did. And here's why. They had been talking to Pete Docter. They had been talking to Alan Horn, the head of Disney, both of whom assured theater owners that they were actually very, they wanted the soul to be in movie theaters over Thanksgiving. They thought, yes, it may not make as much money as it could have, but it will make money. We want it to be in movie theaters. We want, you know, parents to be able to take their kids around the holiday time to movie theater. And it went all the way up the chain to Bob Chapek, who said, right, I hear your concerns, and we're going to put it on Disney Plus. And so this is a shareholder move.
Well, what's shocking here is that Disney has been the biggest cheerleader for the movie-going experience. They've been making so much money at cinemas. And even if you have a big hit on streaming like The Mandalorian, it's also a big benefit to have a worldwide release of a movie that may launch, you know, theme park rides and sales. It helps to have a big worldwide release that people line up for, you know, to watch it on opening night and get excited by and watch it two or three or five times, and it grosses $2 billion as the biggest film of all time. That kind of helps when you're trying to, you know, leverage that into TV shows and theme park rides. You know, that's the driver of the rest of that success. You can have success on TV alone, but I'm still waiting for the Game of Thrones theme park. I suppose it's coming, but you know, and it's not so easy. But here is Soul, a premium Disney film, terrific reviews at the London Film Festival. It looks like it's one of their better efforts in recent years. They're smartly saying, yeah, that extra premium fee, we're going to release stuff on Disney Plus, but you got to pay extra to see it. That really rubbed people the wrong way. And they're releasing it on Christmas Day. And you know what? I actually don't think that's a bad idea in terms of Soul and in terms of Disney. Every year, you want to make a tradition, you release a great animated film or launch a new season or a new series on Christmas Day that you think is really special and good, make it your Christmas gift to people. I think that's a terrific idea. Do that every year. That to me is like, you know what? Okay, sure. You know, here's a new film that we think is marvelous. You do that, a new project. It could be 40 minutes. It doesn't have to be a two-hour feature film. It could be a TV series. You're dropping the episode. It could be a TV movie or a mini series. You drop it on Christmas Day, make that annual tradition, come home to Disney Plus on Christmas Day, share it with the whole family. I'm like, you know what? That's a good idea. But Soul in particular, man, you've just lost $800 million at the worldwide box office. You could have made, you know, $200 million on it and then put it on Disney Plus. The Avengers movie, now you're giving up $1.5 billion if you put it on Disney Plus rather than releasing it in theaters. So, you know, I like the idea of original content released on Christmas Day, a Disney signature. Here's our gift to you. Good idea. Run with it. Plan it for next year. Come up with something special. Not necessarily a $200 million movie, but some great new content that is a gift to your people. Sure, do that. But,
you know,
in terms of abandoning cinema, you look at the movies, Disney's been as bad as anyone in a way.
Yeah, well, you know, what are you talking about? Artemis Fowl?
Right. And, you know, most of the movies that have skipped theatrical to go to streaming have had poor reviews. They've not been good. Artemis Fowl, Trolls World Tour was about as meh as the original Trolls. Onward, that's the only one that really scored with audiences if you look at Rotten Tomatoes. Scoob, Greyhound, the Tom Hanks movie, the one and only Ivan, Mulan, very poor audience reaction to a lot of these movies. You have to go to Hamilton, which is sort of a one-off thing, a Broadway show, and now Soul, which looks like it's going to get very good reviews and probably good audience response. So most of the things that people said, you know, we're going to put out on streaming, there's kind of a good reason. They kind of said, this isn't that good. This isn't necessarily going to click. Artemis Fowl's a dog. Greyhound, eh. Scoob looks like a mess. The one and only Ivan wasn't testing well. Mulan got savaged this way, 8 ways to Sunday. So there's been a pattern in general that these movies they're pushing into online and streaming haven't been the good ones. They're holding back movies. And in general, those have been the ones that they think have a lot of commercial and presumably artistic promise. Soul, I think, is the first one where you can say they took a really good film that could have been a big hit and put it on streaming. I don't know if that's the right idea commercially. I'm questionable, but I don't mind the idea of a Christmas Day gift from Disney. I think that's a good tradition.
You know what we're not talking about right now? The fact that Disney is losing all this money, or not losing, but they're not making as much money as they had in the past, because we're all talking about Soul on Disney Plus.
Well, you're talking about investors are not ignoring the fact that Disney's losing all this money. Well, investors, you know, are perfectly aware that theme parks are, that Disneyland is shut down, and that worldwide they're having trouble, and, you know, that movie theaters are shut down, and they were grossing billions of dollars with all their Avenger movies and Star Wars movies. So yeah, I think investors and people are very aware of that.
You know, there's another animated film that is due to hit theaters, Croods 2, which is a Universal film. And you might recall they have a deal with AMC that they can release movies 17 days after you know, their theatrical release. Some movies, and of course, not all movies, they say will go that way. This is one where I think, you know what, playing it for a month, maybe not 17 days, but play it for 30 days in theaters. Give the kids something to do, something to look forward to, something to go out and do. Do it safely. Wear your mask.
It's coming out around Thanksgiving.
And then, you know what? Roundabout, like, you know, Christmas, between Christmas and New Year's, move it over. Move it to Peacock, move it to HBO, you know, wherever they can, you know, PVOD or something like that. Or keep it in theaters and offer it PVOD.
Right, exactly. If it's making a lot of money, why yank it?
They're not committing, though. If you notice, if you watch the advertisements,
doesn't say
they are. Yeah, they just say trailer now online.
I do disagree. I don't think Disney has spent $200 million to change the conversation briefly for a minute. I don't think that's the case because investors are not fooled by that.
Well, they were after the last earnings call. They basically said, "Listen, we didn't make $8 billion at our parks, but hey, Mulan," and that was all anybody reported. Was Mulan, Mulan, Mulan on Disney Plus. But in any case, you know who's not going to watch either Mulan or Soul or any of these movies on PVOD?
I do. It's Joe Morgan, the longtime ESPN commentator and the Cincinnati Reds MVP. Breaking news, he just died at the age of 77. We didn't have that in our show notes. It just happened. He was, the Reds' second baseman. I mean, he was part of the Big Red Machine. And then he was on Sunday Night Baseball for 21 seasons, a terrific commentator. He died Sunday, apparently, at his home in Danville, California. So our thoughts go out to his family. But a TV figure for decades.
And our thoughts go out to William Bernstein. If that name sounds familiar, then you must be familiar with the studio, former studio, Orion, because he was the founder of that studio. He died at the age of 87.
That's right. As far as I'm concerned, if you were involved with Orion Pictures, you're getting a tribute in our Obits section. You're connected to the Beatles or Orion, you're in, because Orion Pictures was just the man. It just killing it on every level, commercially and critically. When I was coming of age, they were really the best. He was one of four people who co-founded the Mini Major in 1978. That was the first big player launch since the 1930s, almost 50 years since we'd had a big player. And before Orion, he was at United Artists. And after Orion, he was at Paramount. Now, at Orion, they made hits and they made quality. Amadeus, Platoon, Dances with Wolves, The Silence of the Lambs, they all won Best Picture. And The Silence of the Lambs won the top five, which is picture, director, actor, actress, and screenplay. It won them all. And that's only the third time in history it has ever happened. The other two were It Happened One Night and, wait for it, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Now, at United Artists, he was a part of acquiring James Bond, Rocky, The Pink Panther, Midnight Cowboy, and, wait for it, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Two of the three films all time that won the Big Five, and he's involved with both of them. That's pretty cool. I can see clearly now he had a great career.
Well, if you can see clearly, wait a second. See what you're doing now. You want to talk about singer Johnny Nash, who died at the age of 80, and by the way, probably most famous for I Can See Clearly Now, the song I Can See Clearly Now.
Even my mom knows that song. She's not a big pop person. She's like, oh, that's a really good song. So I was going to knock me over with a feather. That's a reggae anthem that was number one for 4 weeks back in the 70s. That was his biggest hit by far, but he had a cool career. He was a child actor and a singer with minor hits and movie roles. Then he came back strong in the late 60s with another few minor hits. Then, of course, I Can See Clearly Now, the rare American to chart and click with reggae music. He helped bring it to the world. Literally, he helped Bob Marley. He signed him to his label. He toured with him. He wrote with him. So he really was a big player in terms of bringing Bob Marley and reggae to the world's consciousness. And of course, that song is on the soundtrack to The Harder They Come. If you don't own any reggae music, get The Harder They Come and then get Bob Marley's Legend, you know, compilation. Those are two great places to start. He faded away a bit in the 80s and beyond. Apparently, he preferred time with his family to trying to build a career. That's the nice way to put it. And you know what? It may damn well be the truth. You know, we always, you know, you want to be a superstar and stay on top for decades. That is a full-time job. That doesn't happen by accident. Madonna and Springsteen, that's not, you know, oh, look what happened. No, no, no. That is a lot of work. That is a lot of focus and determination. And Johnny Nash was like, that's not for me. So he had a great life, and now he's gone.
Well, and after you buy all those Johnny Nash albums, maybe run out and get 1984 or 5150 or Diver Down, okay? You could get that's, of course, those are all Van Halen albums, and the namesake founder of that band, Eddie Van Halen, he died at the age of 65 after a long battle with cancer.
Yeah, he's the key member of Van Halen, one of the biggest acts of the 1980s, hugely influential guitar god. He played fast, but also melodically. And with David Lee Roth, we're not going to talk about the other eras, but with David Lee Roth, they straddled that pop, hard rock, heavy metal line. They had amusing, sexy music videos. They conquered MTV. They had a lot of fun while doing it. And the guy always had a smile on his face. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, beloved, really, in the industry. I would not have known that as such, but there was a big outpouring of affection for Eddie Van Halen. Kind of cool to see.
And when you kind of understand, like, the way he played guitar, mm-hmm. and what he did to kind of influence guitar players and actually influence a lot of guitar players to pick up the guitar for the first time, you can understand why that outpouring was there. Mm-hmm. But that kind of not only wraps up Eddie Van Halen's career, but it wraps up this episode of Showbiz Sandbox. Of course, you can subscribe to our show in iTunes, the Google Play Store, Microsoft Marketplace, Stitcher, anywhere they give podcasts away for free. You can rate and review the show in any one of those podcast aggregators. It does help us out when you do. Links to all of the stories we've discussed on today's episode can be found on our website, showbizsandbox.com. That's where you'll find those ways to subscribe to us, those ways to contact us. dirt@showbizsandbox.com is our email address. That's dirt@showbizsandbox.com. You can also call and leave us a voicemail. The number to call is 888-567-SAND. That's 888-567-7263. We're also on Twitter, where our handle is @showbizsandbox, or on Facebook, facebook.com/showbizsandbox. Again, all of that info is on our website, showbizsandbox.com. The music that you hear at the beginning and end of each show is by the popular indie rock group MGMT. They can be found on their own website, who is mgmt.com. Michael Giltz has a website, and every week it's something new and exciting. What is it this week, Michael?
This week it's mightaswelljump.com. That, of course, is a line from Van Halen's Jump. Pro point. That's not the phrase I'm wanting. What's the point? Good point to keep in mind. Don't search for hotforteacher.com if you're at work.
Correct.
Whoops.
Yeah. That's another Van Halen song, though maybe one that's not as safe for
work. The website has been taken. Let's just put it that way.
Okay. Well, you know what? If you can't find any of Michael's coverage of the entertainment industry on that website, why not head on over to michaelgiltz.com, where all of his work is aggregated. Some of my work can be found on celluloidjunkie.com. Until next week, play nice.